Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free, you can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. There's 1 week until the election of 2012. This is Rex, your host, broadcasting from the river of sandy shores, formerly known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway, the ninth circle of hell around Washington, D.C.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral, as always. So you got some beachfront property there now?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It looks like, you know, if you read the Bible, God pretty much clearly told us that he wasn't going to flood the world again, but he didn't say anything about not flooding Washington, the District of Corruption, and looks like he certainly nailed Washington, D.C., the I-95 corridor, and New York City, home of the Federal Reserve Bank. So I don't know if that's divine intervention, a natural event, a man-made event. Does it really matter? The fact is it's put water on everything, and I think that it is an interesting analogy for what we have to do next week. If we
the I-95 corridor, as John Kennedy once said, that's no great loss.
It's no great loss. The simple fact is if we don't douse the combustion engine of corruption in our nation's capital, we can kiss liberty goodbye. And I think what we'll chat about tonight, Tex, is how we go about doing that. Because let's face it, statistically, realistically, the corporatist Keynesian is going to win the POTUS office next week. Which corporatist Keynesian? Does it fucking matter? One of them is going to win. And the tide of corruption will proceed. So what are we going to do about it? A lot of people, Tex, tend to think that, you know, you fight, you vote, then you go home and you lament your loss. But I would argue that our fight begins on November 7th.
I think a lot of people don't do the fight step. I think they just do you watch TV, you're told what to do, and then you go in and you vote, and then you complain about it. That's kind of, I think, where most Americans are at this point.
Yeah, well, why is that, though? That's what you have to ask yourself. Why are some of us awake and most of us still asleep, even though I would argue that this week is the week that more people pay attention than at any time in the preceding 2 years and the next 2 years?
Well, I think, you know, back in the 1880s, late 1800s, 80% of the people who were eligible to vote at the time voted. And within about 20 years, a little after the turn of the century, the number of people who participated in elections fell off precipitously. And there's a couple reasons for that, but I think there's the economic prosperity argument, which is, hey, the country's doing good, so, you know, what do I care? You know, as long as I'm doing okay, they must be doing a good job. But also, at the time, the South was solidly Democratic, and the North was solidly Republican. And so, you know, people were just like, well, my state's going to go this way one way or another, so why even bother? You know, I'll just do my thing and let, you know, the political class do its thing. I think there's some of that going on today, but the problem is that things are not going well nowadays. So, you know, we need to start paying attention and focusing more. The problem is people are feeling powerless because the predominant source of information that they're getting is through televised media. And televised media just tells you things. It's a completely passive experience, and you're not really participating in one way or another. And no matter how much you may hate what, you know, George Stephanopoulos, Karl Rove, Dick Morris, you know, Mika Brzezinski, but, you know, I just like to say that because I just learned what her freaking name was, has to say, you can't get them to change what it is because you're not participating. It's not a participatory environment. So I think people need to seek out places where they can participate, have their voices heard, and then need to start talking with neighbors and friends and people who don't vote and, you know, try to figure out at least why they think what they think. And that begins a whole conversation about the direction the country's going in and that kind of thing. So
but Tex,
I think we start there.
Tex, it's kind of uncomfortable to talk to people about politics. I mean, you know, we have different views. People have passions about this. It's not polite conversation. It tends to put a damper on dinner parties. Sometimes it causes conflict. Is that really something that we should do?
Hey, my Venezuelan friends, they like to talk about Chavez. You must hear a room erupt and people shouting. Some people hate Chavez. Some people love the guy. Which, you know, they're still friends at the end of the day. But, you know, what I'm talking about is just, you know, friends and neighbors and stuff. And, hey, if it's a complete stranger, who cares if he hates you? You don't know that guy anyway. You know, or that girl, whatever.
But isn't it more important for us to have, you know, a tranquility of mind, peaceful interactions, lack of conflict than it is for us to actually discuss important political questions?
Well, you know, the house is burning down. No. You know, what are you going to have? You do the Zen Buddhist thing where you self-immolate? You know, well, you know, I kept my cool. That's the important thing. Never lost my cool. You know, everything else went up in smoke. So, no, I mean, some things are worth fighting for. And, you know, look, right now, I think, personally, that Mitt Romney is going to win, right? Okay. Unfortunately, that doesn't really mean anything to me because a victory for Mitt Romney is a victory for Mitt Romney. It's not a victory for me. I don't think it's a victory for you, and it's certainly not a victory for the conservative cause, and I don't think he's a change agent, and I don't think he's going to do anything different. The most I've heard people say is, well, he'd do a better job than Obama. Yeah, okay, well, you know. Maybe.
Better
you know,
job.
I'd say that's pretty likely. You know, I mean, I don't think Obama's really doing the best job in the world there. But that's really not saying much about him and his presidency. So, you know, looking on the bright side, even if he does win, you know, I believe in the power of J-curves, things getting worse before they get better, and also demonstrative effects where you can – people can see something and then they can see a lesson out of it. And so if Romney wins, he's not a conservative. And when he gets into power or into office, I don't think you're going to see very much change significantly in Washington. And I also think that his impulse is to be a moderate, to cut a deal with the Democrats. And the deals that Democrats always want is more taxes, more debt, and selling the middle class down the river while protecting people with union jobs whose jobs aren't really in danger in the first place. So that's when they say the working man, they mean unionized labor, not idiots like you and I who don't belong to union. So, you know, as he, what I'd like to call out is, as you see Romney in office, look for those rhino cues of him pulling a George H.W. Bush on you. And
that's
right, raising taxes and doing all these types of things that you can't stand. And the important thing is, while this is going on, don't toe the line for them. Say, look, this is not what I support. Go call your Rush Limbaughs, your Hannitys, your Levins. You know, go talk to people in the blogs. Go write letters to the editor. You know, you as a conservative have a voice, and you can't be going along with this kind of crap happening. And don't feel the reflexive need to defend him because he's our guy. You know, look, he may be your guy right now because you're so terrified of Obama, but once he gets elected, if he does get elected, he was never your guy. He wasn't your first choice. He wasn't your second choice. He wasn't your third choice. You know, you'd rather slam your hand in the car door than vote for this guy, but now you have no choice, or you feel that you have no choice. But, you know, that's just the prison of your own mind. And so you're voting for the guy, right? But come November 7th, it is what it is. And then he doesn't have to be your guy anymore. Okay, Obama's gone. Now what? Now you got a rhino in office. What are you going to do? Are you going to watch this guy? Or are you just going to, oh, okay, well, I'll just tune in again in 4 years? Because if you're doing that, just go ahead and tune out now, because you're part of the problem.
Well, Tex, I think that the problem
really
is, though, when you're telling people to watch this guy, but obviously, you know, people who identify as Democrats or liberals are going to be watching him to complain and bitch about everything he does, even though it'll probably be exactly the same stuff that Obama's doing now. But Republicans, you know, if we're watching this guy, what measuring tool do we use by which to measure his performance? Do we try to hold him accountable to what he said? Because that should be relatively easy to do, since he said everything. I mean, he's probably going to do some of those things.
I would measure it in imperial units. I would not use the metric.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, okay, if we're going to measure him against conservative values, first of all, that's stupid, because he's not a conservative, so we already know that he's going to fall far from that measure. If we're going to measure him in tempering Obama's policies, meaning doing the same policies but maybe not to the same magnitude, I mean, maybe there's a chance that Romney rolls Obama's policies back to the size that they originally were when they were George Bush's policies. Maybe that's what happens. I don't know if that's a victory. It's certainly better than worse, but it's not really moving us in the right direction. But I mean, what are we going to hold him accountable to? And the other question is, how? I mean, if in fact the balance of power that was put in place by our founding fathers, this tug and pull and separation of powers between the legislative and the executive branch, has in fact tilted dramatically towards an imperial presidency, how do you hold someone like Romney accountable in the office when liberals haven't been able to hold Obama accountable, and the Tea Party certainly wasn't able to hold the Republicans accountable?
Well, I think the first step towards that is to have the scales fall from your eyes and stop just supporting your team because it's your team. Now, I could never support the Democrat Party. I don't like the Democrat Party or much of anything about them. But there are and there have been some good Democrats and that sort of thing. And so I wouldn't say because criticism is coming from the Democrat Party, I won't even say the left, because left and right is meaningless in today's political system, but I wouldn't immediately dismiss it. you know, for instance, you know, during the time of Obama's presidency, people have been very critical of the Obama foreign policy and what we've been doing in the Middle East and going over there and talking democracy and all this kind of stuff, which has led to the Muslim Brotherhood coming into power and all that kind of stuff. But if you recall, bringing democracy to the Middle East was George Bush's foreign policy. You loved it back then, or maybe you were critical of it, but you at least supported it and you stood up for it. But as soon as Obama did it, you think it's the worst thing ever. You know, this recalls a conversation I had with a Democrat friend where I was, you know, talking about what year was this, 2009, I think, sort of winterish 2009. I was in D.C., happening to be talking with a Democrat friend. And we got into it, let's just say. And, you know, he said, well, say something positive about Obama, right? You know, this is, I guess, some classical argument trick, you know, just to prove that I just oppose him for whatever. And so I said, well, you know, look, he has come in and he's essentially adopted the Bush foreign policy, I said. And he started yelling, he has not adopted the Bush foreign policy.
He didn't adopt it. He just continued it.
Yeah, I said, well, I don't know if he adopted it, signed papers or something. So, hey, it's my kid now. But basically,
like a Cabbage Patch kid. I adopt George Bush's foreign policy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, come here, you. Oh, you're so cute. you know, I got serious. I'm like, so funny. I said, you asked me to say something positive, so I'm trying to say something, throw you a bone here, and now you're angry. I'm like, okay, so let's not call it the Bush foreign policy, because I know you got, like, you see red when you hear the word Bush because you're crazed, you know, and you're half out of your mind. I said, so let's just say he has, you know, adopted the foreign policy or continued the policies of the previous administration and, you know, whatever, right? So back then, as I said, I'm a recovering neo-con, and I supported the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan and all that kind of stuff. And then over time, you just kind of see that what a complete cluster that is. But, you know, anyway, it gets back to people are blinded by their team. And my team, you know, is always right, and your team is always wrong. Well, that's not always true, because sometimes your team is freaking wrong, you know. Remember, one of the first things Bush did where I had, like, this bit of sort of cognitive dissonance, really, was when he raised tariffs to protect the U.S. steel industry. You know, as someone who supports, you know, free trade and that kind of thing, raising tariffs to support, you know, our domestic industry seems sort of short-sighted. Why don't we create a competitive, you know, environment within the country where they can compete better? For instance, why not lower the freaking, you know, corporate tax rate from the highest one in the industrialized world down to something that would give them, you know, make them at least cost competitive on tax terms with, you know, the rest of the world, that type of thing, before you start raising tariffs. I mean, tariffs are kind of a stupid idea. It's a very blunt instrument. But, you know, so if you believe in things like free trade or, you know, fair trade, whatever you want to call it, watch for those things. Stick with the principles. Quit, you know, voting for the jersey.
Yeah, I think that, that you your examples are right on. And yeah, the issue is principles. But I think that here's the fundamental problem. And I think that this is precisely the intended purpose the oligarchs had when they developed this duopoly. If you give people a rhetorical choice that is so very dissimilar that it actually encourages polarization within the polity, yet that choice is really false because the players that you're voting for are going to do more or less identically the same thing, then the slow drift towards despotism continues while the public is under the impression that their votes are actually tilting the pendulum one way or the other.
This is exactly what, you know, people in the Middle East were saying, you know, when it came to talking about this democracy in the Middle East thing. And, you know, the Middle East, I'm sorry, I keep saying, you know, whatever. The Middle East is the last region that really has not had kind of democratic revolutions. They had inklings of those with the end of colonialism, but they quickly collapsed into despotism and tyrannies and kingships and that sort of thing. But what's the difference between a king and a tyrant if basically his word is law? Same thing. So we start talking about democratic forms and that kind of thing. And so the counter critique comes up, right? This counter critique actually extends back to the late 90s, where as we're heading towards the millennium, people were looking back and, you know, looking forward and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, people were saying, well, what's the best thing that's been happening in, you know, the social sphere or something like that? And people would say, well, it's the rise of Western values of, you know, sort of human rights and, you know, democracy and things like that, right? And so in the East, they don't necessarily appreciate all that. So they started talking about a counter-narrative about Eastern values, right, which is, you know, the good of the collective and all this kind of stuff and being more centralized and state economies rather than destructive laissez-faire capitalism and all this kind of stuff, although we haven't seen laissez-faire capitalism in this country in, geez, over 100 years now.
Yep.
But so they brought this kind of counter-narrative up. So when we start talking to the Middle East about democracy and everything, they say, look, the problem with democracy is, and I'm sorry to go the roundabout way to that, but the problem with democracy is that your two parties are so very, very close, but they magnify all these differences and they get people at each other's throat over these very minor things when these two parties aren't very far apart. Now, these are outsiders observing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you as an insider, you think that they're worlds apart. I mean, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, I mean, Barack Obama's a communist. Mitt Romney is a business guy. And my concept, businessmen would never be, you know, communist, you know, even though some prominent U.S. businessmen have been communists. You know, bankers would never support socialism, you know. The banking industry and socialism are so far apart, they would never, you know. Now the banks love socialism because socialism is not affordable, and so you have to go into debt to afford it, and the bank's main product is debt. So they like socialism. That's great. Oh, yeah, you don't have money for that, do you? Well, guess what? I could give you the money if you, you know, pay me some scratch on the flip side there. You know, Lenin or whatever your name happens to be, Kerensky, who knows. So.
Adolf Joseph.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
You got to understand, there is sort of a Washington consensus about how the country should be run, and right now it's settled around, you know, Keynesian economics and an expansionist, essentially imperial foreign policy that says that we can never withdraw from the world or from any, you know, conflict that's happening overseas because that's what happens during the Second World War or prior to the run-up to the Second World War, and if we start pulling out of the world and if we someone starts being aggressive and we don't instantly, you know, jump their case, then we're going to have another World War II and it'll be global conflict and everything, right? Every conflict is not going to end up in World War II. Every person who's, you know, causing trouble in the world is not the next Adolf Hitler. But, you know, that's the foreign policy consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And the economic consensus is Keynesianism, although it's a perverse bit of Keynesianism, which says that during economic downturns, you should spend like crazy. And then during periods of prosperity, since you're prosperous, you might as well continue to spend like crazy, right? Because you got the money now, so let's just go more into hock, which is like always be in debt.
Yep. Well, I mean, it seems, I think that you nailed it. I mean, it is a Keynesian economic system and an imperialist foreign policy. And this is precisely why we declared independence from Great Britain. So the interesting thing to me is that essentially what we have here and why, in reality, this election, at least vis-a-vis the federal offices, is totally unimportant. Just think about it this way. We are living in an administrative state, meaning that you may change the rulers, parties, people, what have you, but the Keynesian onslaught and the imperialist expansion is part of the administrative establishment that was there before you elected these idiots and will be there after these idiots are gone. And it will continue to churn out the same exact results. The only difference is you're going to have a rhetorical difference. Exactly. So, and the interesting thing, Tex, is that some of us are shocked that this is happening. Some of us are so shocked we just pretend it's not happening and go rah, rah, rah for our team in the hopes that somehow some of the stuff that he says will come true. You know, people voted for Obama because they were hoping, well, he's going to give the middle class a tax cut and tax the wealthy. However, he never defined wealthy, so I don't know who that is. He was going to end the wars. He was going to close Gitmo. He's going to make us safer. So if you were like, hey, you know what? Those are good things. I want those things. He says he can do it. I have no reason to believe he can't do it because he has no record. So let's go ahead and vote for him. And he keeps talking about those things, yet all he did was more or less exactly the same stuff that Bush did. The Democrats hated when Bush did it. And now you got the Republicans who are like, well, Romney says he's pro-life. He says he's severely conservative. He says that he's going to be strong on national defense, but he's going to be a fiscal hawk, and he's going to repeal this health care debacle that Obama passed. Well, he's not going to do any of those things, but, you know, maybe you can hope that he will, that somehow he did have an epiphany and actually became a conservative somewhere between his governorship and his current run for the White House, even though he stole the nomination, and you vote for him. But it's not going to change. And the fascinating thing to me is that our founding fathers told us about this. And actually, one could argue that we were warned about this very drift that democracy naturally has towards soft despotism even before the founding of the Republic. Probably one of essentially our founding fathers that most people have absolutely no awareness of because he never lived in this country, he's a Frenchman, and he's normally referred to as Montesquieu. I know you're familiar with him because you've studied history, but a lot of our listeners probably aren't. Montesquieu was one of the French, I wouldn't call him a philosopher, but, you know, one of the philosophers, and he studied political economy and political philosophy and political science. And he put forward that, you know, liberty is a system, I mean, is a concept that can thrive in nearly any political system if it is the consent of the ruled and the rulers to be free. And he said that tyranny can exist in all of those same systems if the people assent to it. And essentially, the very constitution that codifies liberty and separation of powers, and he was specifically talking about the English system at the time because we hadn't developed ours, but obviously we inherited ours from the British system, enshrines liberty as a principle. And that liberty is then, it becomes like the air we breathe, that we take it for granted. And the natural tendency and corruption of men to develop systems of control out of fear of others harming them. So in a sense of needing security, they will develop systems of control. But because liberty has become the air that we breathe, that it goes unnoticed, that they will incrementally drift towards a system of control by those who have the highest amount of fear and the most demand for control, and the populace as a whole, because having imbibed on this liberty and enjoyed the benefits of it, becomes so disquiet that they allow it to happen. And I think, you know, they told us this is exactly where we're going to get if, in fact, the, quote, American experiment is successful. And the fact is the American experiment has been resoundingly successful. I would argue more successful than the founding fathers even dreamed. I suspect that they probably thought we were going to have a revolution not 40 years after they wrote the Constitution. So the interesting thing is that why do men like Romney, Obama, and those they work for, the Rothschilds, the banksters, all that, you know, these kind of wealthy, uber-wealthy international people, why do they have so much fear? Well, when you have an addiction to material possession and you have more than you could possibly ever need, you tend to rest your security on it. It becomes your reason for being and your level of comfort. And because you have so much, your greatest fear is losing it. And how do wealthy people really lose their wealth? Competition. If they do the foolish things with the wealth at the top of the food chain, then some upstart somewhere down the food chain is going to outcompete them and outdo them in the marketplace and therefore acquire some of their wealth, not necessarily by taking it from them, but by driving consumers towards their goods and therefore reducing the aggregate percentage that those in power have. So when someone is that wealthy, their chief aim is to hold on to that wealth because of the power that comes with it. And so they will impose these systems, but they can never do it except one of two ways. Either by the threat of force, you march your army into the other place and you say, hey, look, I'm in charge now, do as I say or my stormtroopers will kill you. Or you do it by convincing them to hand you that power. And I believe that we're in a situation now where the bulk of the American people has assented to having our power taken because we've stopped being involved in local politics and everything has become about the federal election. And therefore, we sent all this power up to Washington. We sent all this money up to Washington. And Washington controls our very lives in an administrative capacity where it's completely impersonal. It's those 436 people you were talking about the other day, Tex. So I think what we have to do and we have to realize is that in this election, what we have is more or less a guaranteed loss. But what we need to do is send a message out. And this is the week to do it, because right now more people are paying attention to politics, albeit on the East Coast they're paying attention to the weather. They're paying more attention to politics as a whole this week than any other week in the last 2 years and probably any other week in the next 2 years. So this is the time to get people involved and get them awake and let them think. Just ask them the question, have you thought of another way? Have you considered that the reason things are going wrong is because the narrative that we're being fed is incorrect, and share with them some information about alternate parties. And frankly, you would call them third parties. They're not third parties. They're second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth parties, because really there's only one party, and all of these are really the alternates. So they're alternate parties. And if we can get enough numbers there to actually force the corporate-owned media to acknowledge it in some way, and then we reach out to those people that we know personally, people in your community, people on Facebook, on Twitter, YouTube, what have you, and get them to understand that it is all about reclaiming our local power, because the more power we have in our local communities and our states, the less power Washington has, because the Constitution really gives Washington very little power. But we've ceded so much. And a lot of our state officials are in compliance with this, because where do they go after their positions in state government? They go to D.C. So they're not going to attack the throne that they wish to sit on. So it becomes our responsibility to do this and hold them accountable
well,
to it.
As a politician, I mean, they're trying to go where the action is, right? And
yep.
If the American people are totally focused on what's going on at the federal level and not at the local level, but they're just going to use the local level as a stepping stone to get to the federal level, where they'll claim that I'm actually going to go fix your problem. You know, now you're paying attention to me because I'm running for a federal office. And then when they get up there, you know, Washington's like, hey, bumpkin, thanks for coming into Washington from wherever the hell you came from, but we're not interested in your ideas. We have a system here, and shut up or we'll actually run someone against you, and you'll never come back again. And he's like, maybe I'll shut up then and just go along to get along. And that's what happens, because people are paying attention. You know, you really have to start paying attention at the local level, you know, as to what's what's going on, you know, particularly paying attention to your judges, who your sheriff is. You know, all these things are very important. It's all interlocking and interweaving as to how your community works. And really, if your community works well, you know, that's the first step to having a nation that works well, right? Because if everyone had well-functioning communities and the federal government was screwed up, everyone would be able to point out, like, hey, it's the federal government that's screwed up. But we've got so many things that are screwed up in this country right now that, you know, it's pretty hard to figure out. It seems overwhelming. And part of that is because people who were awake to the problem said, you know, this is a big damn mess, you know, and I don't know that my vote counts, and I don't know that my voice is being heard, and I think, you know, there's some big system that's making all of this stuff happen that's bigger than I am, and you know what? I'm just going to go home and ignore it, you know, and hope it goes away. Well, that was the wrong conclusion to draw, because there was someone who was awake and paying attention and saw that, hey, this whole thing's rigged and it's screwing us. But rather than actually doing something about it and trying to educate others, you know, as to what was going on, they just went home. So you got to make sure you don't do that, because you got to stay involved. Because really, I mean, you know, we're in the last days of Rome here if we don't start getting it together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and look, I think it was de Tocqueville who noticed that the Americans are so involved in politics at their local level that they strengthen, inform, and build up their intermediary institutions, which keeps the power diffused. Now, you know, what are intermediary institutions? Well, those are the places of local authority. It starts with the family, the church or the synagogue, the local town, the community groups, you know, whether it's, you know, the Lions, the Knights of Columbus, the women's groups, various other associations, you know, those groups, the community groups, the local government, you know, which is, you know, your township or your local neighborhood, with, you know, the sheriff there, and then it moves up to the county government, the state government, and so on and so forth, and that we were all so involved politically in our intermediary institutions that they were vibrant, they were thriving, and they were strong, and that basically kept Washington a distant place, relatively unimportant, save for a few things, you know, setting the measure and value of coinage, principally gold and silver, in relation to foreign coin, setting standard units of weight and measure across the country, obviously developing a uniform system of training the local militias so that if they are deployed at various parts of the country, they would have uniform instructions and uniform ways of communicating. So it had its very important functions, but they were so distant, and they only were involved at acute times, you know, under threat of invasion, you know, when we had to actually go to war that was declared by Congress, those kinds of things. Other than that, everything was local. So, you know, that old cliche that all politics is local, well, it used to be true, but now, is that really true anymore? Well, the principles haven't changed. The order of execution hasn't changed, but I think that our perception has changed. We've all become interconnected. We all get our, like you said, the news feed from the passive box that pumps propaganda at us, and so we take this to mean that we're all, you know, on the same page, so to speak. And it's either you're on the left side of the page or the right side of the page.
I saw Dancing with the Stars. Did you see Dancing with the Stars? I saw Honey Boo Boo. Did you see Honey Boo Boo? Okay, yeah, we're all on the same page.
Yeah, you know, it's bread and circuses on a massive electronic scale, and as long as we're falling for it, we really shouldn't be bitching about what they're doing, because we're basically telling them, you're smarter than we are, you know how to spend our money better, you know who we need to invade and kick their ass and who we don't, you know best how much water I should have when I flush my toilet, what kind of light bulb I should have, and whether my car should be spewing out some kind of organic fertilizer to help the trees rather than CO2, which apparently doesn't help the trees, although I was under the impression that photosynthesis required CO2 and light, but maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. So, you know, if we tell them that they're smarter than we are and that they know how to live our lives better than we do, that's what they're going to do. It's only when we tell them, piss off, do your job, you got 18 things to do, do those, and leave me the hell alone. If we all tell them that, then they won't have a choice but to concede, because there are more of us than them. We have all the legal power. We just don't use it. And that's what this election really is about. So no matter what happens on the evening of November 6th or the morning of November 7th, or perhaps it's delayed, no one gets 270, it goes to December 8th or what have you, no matter what happens, odds are we're going to get a corporatist Keynesian bankster puppet in the White House, and, you know, tyranny comes in two flavors, so you can have your D or your R, your blue or your red, and that won't make much of a difference. But if enough of us, instead of wasting our vote playing this game and voting for the same loser just in a different team, actually voted for alternate candidates who have different principles, constitutional principles. And I don't want to hear, you know, the argument. Right. You know, everybody says, well, I don't agree with Johnson on this, and Good is kind of this. It doesn't really matter at this point, because statistically speaking, Good, Johnson, Stein, Anderson. Right. You don't agree with Romney and Obama. That's what matters. So vote for the other guys and give them some standing, give them some prominence, make a splash, and that'll encourage other people to think about it. And then roll up your sleeves, do not go back to sleep, and get to work on November 8th, because 2014 is not that far away, and we are in for an economic, political, and possibly military shitstorm for the next 2 years, that you've got to be active now in order to roll back this oligarchic, corporatist, Keynesian nightmare and begin restoring a constitutional republic where you can be free to be an American once again. And it's not going to happen in one cycle. It's not going to happen in two. It's taken damn near 100 years to bring us to this point. That means that nobody who was alive when this shit started is living today. And you can only honor your ancestors by fighting for what they gave you. And don't worry about what you didn't do before and what vote you screwed up and what you didn't know and I should have read the Constitution, or I'm 70 years old, what does it mean? Don't worry about any of that stuff. The moment that you have is right now. And do something. The information's out there. I mean, Tex, you remember when we were kids, if you wanted some information, where you had to go? The library, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You had to go drive somewhere and then sit down and go through the card catalog and all that crap.
Yeah. Right, and then you'd have to like run down the aisles and find, you know, using the Dewey Decimal System to find the shelf and the aisle of the book that you wanted. And then you had to get that, and you had to scroll through the index to find the data that you wanted, and then maybe make a photocopy of it or write some notes and then go get the other book. I mean, it took forever. I remember any time I had to do research, it was just a nightmare. Kids these days probably don't know that because, well, what, how do we research now?
On the internet.
Yeah, just,
so
you know,
you
Google
it,
search engine, type it in, and you have a wonderful bevy of information. Now there's a drawback.
It's real convenient because you can then copy it and then paste it into your document, and then you can put your name on it in your homework, sorry.
Yeah, plagiarism is easier than ever. not that Tex and Rex advocate plagiarism. You know, the amazing thing is
it also makes plagiarism easier than ever to catch, I would let you know. Because I have friends who, when they see a suspicious sentence, like this guy would never talk that way, they throw it into Google. They're like, oh, there you go. And then, you know, they get an F for the semester. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's easier to catch. But here's the thing. There is a drawback to that text. There is a disadvantage to information overload. It is far too much to sift through when possibly politics is not your area of expertise. And I agree with that. So what you need to do is find a few different independent sources that you can use to access this information, and then take the time to study and learn, not necessarily partisan politics or even necessarily current events and things. That's clearly for your news sources. But read the Constitution. Read the Declaration of Independence. Read the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. Perhaps read Montesquieu, you know, de Tocqueville. There is a bevy of tradition of liberty and political thought in Western tradition that is accessible to you like it's never been before, and yet we are more disconnected,
Rex,
and more ignorant than ever.
Let's say pick the issue that interests you the most, for whatever reason. People are interested in different things. Find the issue that interests you the most and go study the heck out of it. And look not at opinion pieces about, although as someone told me who wrote opinion pieces, but really it's for people who don't know what they think yet. And you're sort of teaching them how to look at the issue, and hopefully you're convincing them and they're framing it in the way that they, you know, that the writer of the editorial wants you to see it. So, you know, I would start there. And then, you know, in sort of your spare time before you go to bed, then I, you know, hit the heavy stuff, the Montesquieu and the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, that kind of stuff, because, you know, that stuff can take a while to get through, and really, you know, it can be a bit heavy, and sometimes it's also good for aiding in sleep. It's can be the chamomile tea of reading sometimes, but very interesting and definitely worth doing. So,
yep,
you know, that's how I got involved. There was an issue I was interested in. I started researching about it a lot, and then that led me to other things, and then, you know, a bunch of things started making sense. The nice thing about history and about politics is that once something is done, it's done. So it's happened that one time, and it's not going to change what happened, and you can go through and keep referencing, and then it all, pretty soon you can assemble a pretty big picture in a short period of time.
I concur 100%, and I think that, you know, a lot of us like this. We have a disease, okay? We're what are commonly referred to as political junkies. A lot of us can't stand it, but here's the thing. You may not have an interest in politics. The person you're talking to and trying to wake up may not have an interest in politics, but this is not an opt-out kind of game, okay? Because politics has an interest in you. And you cannot be a passive spectator. It's a full contact sport because politics has its hand in your wallet, has its hand in your toilet, has its hand in your light fixture, has its hand in your car, in your job, in your paycheck, in the way you raise your children, and it's getting its hand in where you go to church. So it's got its hand everywhere. And if you don't get involved and you're just a passive spectator, you might as well let them put their hand up your backside and just run you like a puppet. So your lack of interest is really irrelevant. You don't have a choice. There is no opt-out. You're in it. So you better get in full contact and full mode. Speaking of full contact and full mode, Tex, we're at 45 minutes in, so we got an hour and 15 minutes of show left, and we have a caller, area code 954. If you just want to listen, let me know. I'll remute you, but otherwise, tell us who you are and what is on your mind. 954, go.
Hi, Rick. This is Harriet, and I'm just listening for now.
Hi, Harriet. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
We appreciate you listening. Hope we're teaching you something important tonight, and hopefully you're losing that fear and getting excited about the prospects of liberty in this country.
Oh, yeah. I've lost the fear.
Oh, good. That's wonderful to hear. All right. Thanks for
Excellent.
Listening, Harriet.
Okay. Read my notes, though.
I will do my best.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Harriet.
Thank you. All right.
All right, folks. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. Repeat, 646-649-1013. Call in and talk to Tex and Rex about what's on your mind regarding the upcoming elections. And if you like what you hear, please share this with your friends. And the easiest way to do that is go into our Blog Talk Radio page, which is blogtalkradio.com/Tex and Rex. And you can actually click the link that says follow, and you will follow the show, which means you will receive notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile, whatever email you have associated to it, when we're broadcasting and other updates. Also, if you're on Facebook, please go to our Facebook page, which is the Tex and, the word and spelled out, Rex Show. And you can like the page, and you'll receive notifications. We put all our broadcasts and archives there as well. Any show that we broadcast is available in the archives, and you can just listen to it in your browser, on your smartphone, or your iTunes. You can even download an MP3, which is pretty important, because if you want to share information you hear on here with somebody, you can always send them an MP3, and they can play it in any MP3 player. Now, why is this important? Well, we cover a lot of things, and we often get callers that provide information. Sometimes they talk about links, which I'll try to put on the Tex and Rex show page. But sometimes there's a lot of data. We had a great conversation last week with David Callahan from Tools for Justice, and he mentioned several websites that were important. They're linked on our page, so go to the Tex and Rex page on Facebook, and you will find those links. But if you're considering a vote for an alternate party, and you're concerned about whether they're on your ballot or they're a write-in, and if they're a write-in, do you actually have to write them in, or are they actually on the ballot? How does that work? That information is available at writeinrevolution.com, and you can actually have an affidavit that you sign and get notarized to verify your vote in case there's any shenanigans, which there probably will be. So you have information and tools at your fingertips. We'll try to put them on the website, but always download the show and you can re-listen to it and kind of absorb the information. Generally speaking, when information is new, it takes about 16 to 50 times before it like gets into your brain, especially if it's something you have to unlearn. And for most of the people that you're talking to, unlearning the, quote, left-right paradigm, the Democrat-Republican choice, is more difficult than learning how the Constitution works and how the electoral process is supposed to work. If they cannot unlearn this paradigm that they've been drummed into for all of their life, then they won't be able to listen to the new information. So it's very important that you help people by giving them repeated messages to let them know that we have options and that we have the power and that more than 40% of Americans identify as conservative. And most Americans who vote are registered as independents. So the duopoly is actually so weak that it is always about to be broken, yet at the last minute, they employ fear tactics to draw us back in. Don't fall for the fear. And Tex, one person who I know doesn't give in to the fear, he never backs down, he never shuts up, Sammy Sanford. Sammy, you're live with Tex and Rex.
Hey, Rex and Tex. I'm calling
hey,
in
Sammy.
On Skype. Hey, Tex. You're both of you are awesome patriots. And, I mean, today they have been coming at me like crazy. And I was thinking about saying, give it up. And you're probably not seeing the majority of this. This coming off Twitter. And these people, we had an awesome show today with Chris and...
I heard Terry Sigmund on your show, Sammy.
Yeah.
That was good to hear, Terry. Terry's a great guy.
Yeah, Terry was awesome. And he is just confused who he needs to vote for. And I'm sorry that he's leaning towards voting for Mitt Romney. That
what?
Will... Yep.
Interesting.
And
I mean, but, you know, my thought is, you know, people got to do what they want to do. And so, you know, I know someone who said, I don't like Mitt Romney, but I could never forgive myself if my vote ended up, you know, making Obama president or something like that, right? Okay, well, so this a person governed by fear, you know? And so what am I going to tell them, you know? I think it's a bad way to make a decision, but that's their way of doing it. So, you know, at this point for the election, what can you do? Everyone's got to make up their own mind. Time's up. And, you know, let's look at what happens after the election. November 7th, and we can all have a conversation and figure out who actually won and then what the heck we're going to do about it, because I think no matter who people vote for, even if they do vote for Romney, we're all agreed that, well, I don't want to ever see another guy like Romney on my party's ticket.
And I agree.
That's a conversation we need to have.
Now, there are some things that can be done, though. Sammy, are you and Tex both aware that the Free and Equal – Foundation has another debate on November 5th. It was supposed to be tonight, but they moved it to November 5th because of this hurricane.
Yes.
And this time we actually had a hurricane, unlike that fake hurricane in Tampa. You guys remember when we were down in Tampa and they shut the convention down for a hurricane?
Yep. We were there, Rex.
There was no hurricane, right?
Right. I mean,
it was just clouds coming over every half hour, misting rain, moving on.
We were right there. And Tex and Rex were right there with me. They are the awesome patriots that provided my avenue to go to Tampa. And now I am being attacked by the Newt supporters because I will not support Mitt Romney.
Well, here's a problem, Sammy. I mean,
if you're a
Newt
supporter, why is it expected you'd be a Romney supporter?
Right.
Well,
comes in the name, it comes in the label. I'm a Newt supporter. It doesn't say anything
right.
about Romney on that label.
And what have I said for the years, for the past year? I would.
You
never,
said you would never vote for Mitt Romney, and I
right.
believed you.
Yeah. And it has not changed.
That's right. And this is what gets me. This is what baffles me. Okay, look, let's just say that you were shoulder to shoulder with us trying to get Newt through the primaries and then to a brokered convention, because we know that Newt would be, you know, Newtzilla in Washington, D.C. and start actually changing some of this crap. We know this, right? And then, you know, it didn't happen. They stole the nomination. It's Mitt Romney. Okay, well, you got two choices. You can either say, screw this, I'm sticking with my principles that brought me to support Newt in the first place, or I'm going to capitulate and just support the party. Okay, well, you know, you can make that calculus. But the question that I have is, where the hell do you get off attacking and threatening other people for exercising their conscience with their vote? I mean, you're exercising your conscience allegedly by capitulating on every principle that you said that you stood for to vote for a corporatist Keynesian liberal Democrat who doesn't stand for anything in which you believe just because he stole the nomination in your own party. Now, I think that that's stupid, but if you want to do that, then it is your right to do that. You will be part of the problem, but it is your right to do that. It is also my right to vote for whoever the hell I want to vote. It's also my right to not vote at all if I think all the choices suck or that
damn
the machines
right.
are rigged. Okay, so you don't get to attack – I mean, what? How are you a conservative if you are willing to threaten violence – and attack somebody and slander and libel them because they won't vote your way?
And you want to tell me that you're actually espousing conservative principles? You're a fascist. You're a violent, anti-democratic, anti-republican. And when I say anti-democratic, I'm talking about democracy. You're an Alinskyite. Exactly, Tex. They're Alinskyites. So you've sold yourself and your soul in order to vote for this loser from Massachusetts, and you're attacking everybody else for not doing it? Look.
You know why they're doing it, Rex? This is the best part. Because they're so terrified that Barack Obama is a leftist communist in disguise Alinskyite that in order to stop him, they have to become basically right-wing equivalents of Alinskyites that will go and attack anybody who doesn't support their freaking cause. You've become the thing you despise. This isn't victory.
It is a victory because the people are so fucking afraid of us. Plain and simple.
Well, I don't think they're afraid of us, Sammy. I think they're afraid of Obama.
Yeah. No.
They're upset with us for saying this and for not going and towing the line with them. I mean, they're the ones who were jumping off the cliff, and they're like, come on, you got to jump off the cliff because we're going to do it, because they know what they're doing. They know they don't support the guy, and they know they think deep down that it's stupid, but they're angry at us because we're the type of people who have the strength to stand up and say, no, I'm not doing it, but they don't, and so they're going to go along, and then that makes them upset with us. Well, what's so great about you that you can do this and I can't? I don't know. You know?
Exactly.
I'm in a different place than you are. So you go jump off the cliff, you know,
and
I'll see you later. I'll be up here.
And Tex is in Texas. Rex is in Virginia.
At least I was yesterday. I'm not sure where I am today, but somewhere out at sea.
But we're in Florida, here in Jacksonville. We do not shut up. We do not back down. And people that want to smear me, and I don't know if you saw what I did tonight, Rex. I had an idiot call in the show using the N-word repeatedly.
Oh, that's always wonderful. So mature.
And I gave his phone number out on the radio show. And I will do that from now on and give their number out.
Go ahead, because lately you've been having trouble with like a particular internet site in particular, which are just kind of a bunch of internet trolls or, you know, a bunch of 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds hanging around their house with nothing to do. But, yeah, just call them out. Get the numbers out, you know. I mean, they're doing it to you. Do it to them. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, here's the thing, and this is pretty serious, Sammy, because when people do stuff like this, it's for two reasons. One, either they believe that garbage, in which case they're idiots, because those are, even though those things occurred and still occur in our country, it isn't part of the principles. Even Thomas Jefferson, who himself was a slave owner, wrote documents that transcended his own prejudice, and we've been able to proceed from there. But they either believe in those stupid things, or they use them as a smear tactic. Either way, it's either a racist moron or an Alinskyite lefty. And it's not going to work, because the fact is we've moved beyond this stuff. This is not about anybody's race, anybody's religion, anybody's socioeconomic standing. This is about one thing and one thing only. As an American, you are a sovereign citizen, and you have the right to determine the course of your life and how you want to live it. There are areas of certain limitation that we put on ourselves through government in order to keep order, but those are very specific, very limited, and we have a right to stand up for those very principles, because if we don't stand up for them, then we all fall. See, there are some fools who think that if they're connected, if they're friendly with the current powers that be, the current administration, the current milieu of political royalty within a party, then they'll be okay and they'll benefit from the largesse of the state. The problem with these fools is that things will change and they will eat their own, because there is no honor among thieves. And even the revolutionaries like Marat and Danton and Robespierre in the French Revolution, they all ended up under the very guillotine that they put the French people under. So you don't toy with this kind of crap and play favorites and try to figure out how you can angle it so that you will personally benefit as everybody else in the country fails.
Well,
you either stand for liberty or we all fall. Go ahead, Tex.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you something. It's even simpler than that, Sammy. I mean, they hear you have a Southern accent, and they're bigots. And so they have been told their whole life in the government schools that everyone from the South is a racist. And so they hear you, and they hear Constitution Party, and they think, oh, this guy's a big racist. And so let's go in and let's say racist things and get him to agree, like a Borat strategy, right? But they don't agree. They don't know anything about your background or anything. They're just bigots. And all they're doing is they're embarrassing themselves by doing this because they're just showing what low human beings they themselves are. So, you know, look, back in the old South, you know, the bad South, right? Now they'd run around and they were lynching people, right? About 50 lynchings a year between 1893 and, I don't know, something like 1913 or something like that, right? Okay, so mostly they were going after blacks, but they also killed white people who were advocating for, you know, the rights of blacks and that kind of stuff in society. You know, so, you know, there were people of all stripes in the South at the time when the South was the bad South. There were people who were abolitionists in the South, and they were abolitionists because they grew up under a system that allowed segregation or allowed slavery, and they saw it and they knew it was bad. And so what I'm trying to say is just because someone is from the South, don't instantly project all the bigoted crap that you've been told about someone who is from the South. There are all types of people. Some people have moral clarity and others do not. But, it's just ignorance is what it is.
And, Dan, let me interject this here. I was a Herman Cain supporter at the very beginning. I did not attack Newt Gingrich not one time. But when Herman Cain dropped out, Herman Cain did not have to tell me to jump over to Newt Gingrich. And I'm called a racist because I was promoting a black libertarian that goes by the name Herman Cain, which I love the man. He is.
Wait, Herman Cain's black? I didn't know that.
Well, see, Sammy, and all of this they don't know because they just heard about you, whatever it was, last week. And so now, you know, it's sort of like a shark feeding frenzy. And they're just, hey, it's a guy, sounds like he's from the South. So let's go call in and then we'll go say a bunch of racist things and get him to agree because that will reaffirm my, you know, bigoted anti-Southern bias that I've been, you know, has been drummed into me from day one ever since I've been going to these government schools.
But here's the interesting thing. Interesting thing is that these people are attacking Sammy not because they even believe that he could be racist. It's just a good tool to use. They're attacking Sammy because he won't support Mitt Romney. But what they will never address, and by the way, to preface this, I'm not saying Mitt Romney's a racist, but what they will never address is that Mitt Romney was a bishop in the LDS Church at the time.
Amen.
When the official policy of the LDS Church was that the blacks are cursed with black skin because they are the children of Cain. A blatantly institutionalized racist policy long after the civil rights movement, long after the desegregation of the South. But they won't address that point, yet they'll use this false lie in order to denigrate you because you won't capitulate and support their usurper candidate. Because let's face it, there's nothing conservative about Mitt Romney. Nothing at all. And that's what this is about. It's about the principles of conservatism that the Republican Party says that they stand for. And we're merely saying, if you say that you're conservative, I'll be with you and we'll support conservative candidates. We had conservative candidates. There was Herman Cain. There was Michelle Bachmann. There was Newt Gingrich. There was Ron Paul. But they kept on force-feeding us this liberal Democrat who hasn't a conservative bone in his body. And now they're pissed because we won't accept it?
Well, look, when I started taking a hike on the Republican Party, I mean, literally, was back in January when the narrative was Mitt Romney or, hey, look at Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a big government, you know, conservative, right? If you want to call it that. He's a social values conservative, but he's all about big government and massive spending. And essentially, I dislike that just as much as I dislike, you know, Mitt Romney's liberalism. And when it became clear that these are my two choices, I was like, you know, what am I going to do with this party? How do I get out of this? And that's when I jumped into the lurch for Gingrich. And I was like, look, we got to do this thing because I like Ron Paul, right? I started off this election year as a Ron Paul supporter, but I know that the Republican establishment cannot stand him and they will just lie, cheat, and steal to keep him from getting in. And when I saw Gingrich up there talking and speaking and having been the Speaker of the House and once the leader of the party that led it to great victory and it did fantastic, wonderful things under him, I was like, the leadership of this party will accept Gingrich as the leader if we can bring them to heel. And so that's my goal, bring them to heel. And then Gingrich could get Ron Paul to be his vice presidential pick because Ron Paul will increase the size of the base of the party and we'll get the youth vote and we're going to win. And so that was my mission, to make that happen. And, you know, it didn't work, but when the party started jamming either Romney or Santorum down my throat, I was like, I just can't, you know, what's going on with this party? I don't know if I can,
I mean,
can stomach it anymore. You know, and even Ron Paul called Santorum out and just said, you're a fake. You're not a conservative. You plan to be a conservative, but you're a fake. I was like, God, I love that guy. Anyway, go ahead.
But, hey, Dan, I mean, I was tonight defending Ron Paul on my radio show. We had Terry on the show, and Terry is kind of mixed up. Terry is an awesome patriot, and I hope he wakes up very soon. And he said that Virgil Goot and the Constitution Party are not on the ballot in North Carolina, but
I would say I would not expect at this point people know where they are. Okay, so
yeah,
either they're going to pile in for Romney because that's all they know what to do, and there's not enough time to try to talk them out of it, or they're going to be the type of person that stands up and they vote their principles and they actually look around and figure out who they want. The thing is, we've got to start talking about what do we do after the election's over and how do we set it up and how do we stay involved so that this crap never happens to us again, so they never catch us with our pants down. Because we thought after the Tea Party...
Oh, I agree. I mean, and Friday night, we've got a special guest on the show. And I think you will probably like it, Dan. It'll be at 9 o'clock Eastern time. But my vote is already gone for Virgil Goot.
Good. And that's a good vote.
Yeah, that's a good vote.
All right. So, Sammy, you're airing this Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern, and this Friday it's still the same 9 p.m. we had today because we don't fall back until Sunday morning, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they can find the show on Blog Talk Radio under Constitutional Conservatives Unite, correct?
Correct. Okay. Very correct.
And folks, what you can do is when you look for Constitutional Conservatives Unite, or you find the link in Coalition of Freedom or Constitutional Conservatives or on Sammy's Facebook page, go to the Blog Talk Radio page, and right under the icon for the show, there's a button that says follow. If you click on follow, you will get a notice every time Sammy posts a show, and it'll tell you what time the show is on. You can do that for Tex and Rex and also Bard's Logic Political Talk or any
Amen.
Blog Talk Radio show. So please go ahead and do that. That's the best way for you to know when we're broadcasting. And let me just quickly interject this. I'll throw it back to you, Sammy, because we got 50 minutes of show left. Tex and Rex will be back on the air this Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern, for more Liberty Talk
awesome.
And the end of duopoly. We're also going to be broadcasting this coming Monday and Tuesday because we have two debates on Sunday and Monday. Sunday night, which is November 4th, we have the Ralph Nader sponsored debate in Washington, D.C., with all four alternate party candidates who have access to 270 electors, and that is Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party, Virgil Goode of the Constitution Party, Jill Stein of the Green Party, and Rocky Anderson of the Justice Party. So if you're not sure how you're going to vote, but you know you don't want to vote for Romney and you will definitely not vote for Obama, and you want to look at your alternatives, this is a great opportunity to hear the candidates speak on important issues. In the last Free and Equal debate, we had actual discussion about things that were never brought up in the duopoly debates. They talked about the NDAA, Sections 1021 and 1023. They talked about drone strikes. They talked about the Constitution. It was actually a very good debate. You won't agree with everybody. Obviously, if you're a conservative, Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson are not going to be your candidates, but it is important to listen to the various voices. And then again on November 5th, Free and Equal has their second debate. Unfortunately, they only have two candidates, but it should still be an exciting debate because it is between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. So you have Gary Johnson, who is formerly a Republican, now in the Libertarian Party, who is a quasi-libertarian. He's actually rather fiscally conservative and very socially liberal, which is problematic for some conservatives, but it is certainly fine for those who are concerned principally about economics. And Jill Stein, who is a liberal socialist, which would actually be a more principled vote for people who identify as liberals than voting for Barack Obama. So it's very important to get people to listen to these two debates. We'll be broadcasting at 11 p.m. following both debates, and then we will be back on the air the following Wednesday at 10 p.m. to kind of analyze how the election turned out and let you know which corporatist Keynesian won. And then where we're going to go from there so that we can be not caught with our pants down, as Tex just said, in 2014. Now, the call-in number, you got 47 minutes of show left, so call-in number is 646-649-1013, 646-649-1013, and our Facebook page is the Tex and Rex Show, so please like our page to get notifications of when we're broadcasting. Back to you, Sammy.
Awesome show. Here, I'm going to let my wife have a little say-so about Virgil Goode. And there you go, baby. There you go. Yes. Well, she is declining at the time, but I'm going to go spank her.
Well, Sammy, you know, your behavior is yours alone, and we don't need to know about it on the air.
But we got to support Virgil Goode or Randy Johnson. I am a Virgil Goode supporter. Plain and simple.
And that's your right, Sammy.
And that is my constitutional right.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as I've said, for this election, you know, people have to make up their mind as to what they're going to do. A lot of people have already voted, so many people have already decided, and so we're just locked in waiting for what it is that's actually going to happen. And at this point, time to start planning for post November 6th. And what do we do then? Because the party clearly is screwed up. After the 2010 Tea Party, where we said, hey, look, we already rejected this kind of behavior on the part of Washington back in 1994. We certainly don't want to put up with it now. And we had great victory there, and then unfortunately that led to John Boehner becoming Speaker of the House, and he doesn't care a whit about the Tea Party or the conservative or the Republican cause. Well, he cares about the Republican cause, but only if the Republican cause involves trying to become a Democrat light. But he doesn't care about conservatives, and he can't stand the Tea Party because it's always trying to fight and it's always trying to cut the federal budget, which is not what John Boehner is about. And so he started purging Tea Party members, and we all saw that happening. We were like, well, come 2012, we're going to get a guy. We're going to find the best guy to run for president against Barack Obama. And dang it, we're going to get him elected. We're going to put him in office. We're going to stop all this stuff. We're going to cut government spending. We're going to lower taxes. We're going to reduce, you know, government intrusion in our lives and all this other stuff that we're going to do. And the party was like, no, you're not. We don't like the Tea Party. We don't like the Tea Party. We don't like you guys. We don't like the stuff they stand for. So we're going to give you Mitt Romney. And that's your only choice. You got Mitt Romney. And then we're going to find the weakest, you know, other person who qualifies in your mind as a conservative, and we're going to push him up to be the alternative. His name turned out to be Rick Santorum, and these are your choices. You either get Romney or you get Rick Santorum. That's it. I mean, this is like when the only time I've seen a choice like this, I won't even use that analogy because I don't like it. But anyway, but there's something rotten in the heart of the Republican Party. And I just want to submit to you that there is something to this next guy in line phenomenon within our party, and it certainly is not on behalf of the damn voters, okay? Because I don't give a crap who the next guy in line is, but McCain lost to Bush, so he's the guy in 2008, even though no one wanted McCain. Then, you know, now it's Romney because, well, he's the guy who withdrew because McCain was, it was his turn, so now it's going to be Romney's turn. You know, I'm not doing this. So whose turn is it now? Are they going to tell us, what if Romney loses? Are they going to tell us in 2016 that it's Santorum's turn?
No.
Or are they going to tell us that it's Newt Gingrich's turn?
Definitely not. It will be Jeb Bush.
It's going to be Jeb Bush's turn. That's what it's going to be, because it's never the turn of the guy you want. It's always the turn of the freaking rhino. It's always the rhino's turn. They go straight to the head of the line. You ever notice that? I don't like that about this party, okay? So I'm pretty close to getting off the, you know, the crazy, you know, merry-go-round here. And the rest of you guys, you can sit on this thing and you can say, well, if you go, quote, third party, then you'll never win. Well, yeah, but if you keep voting for the Republican Party, you're never going to win either.
Yeah.
Because they're never going to pick a conservative.
What do you win?
You're not winning.
No.
What do you win if Romney wins? What do you win? You don't win anything. You get rid of Obama. That's a good thing. Getting rid of Obama is a good thing. So, you know, I suppose we win that, right? Obama's gone. That's good. I'm excited about that. Can't stand Obama. Obama's terrible. That's a good thing. But what did you gain? Okay, you got rid of Obama. You gained Romney. How's that help? Okay, Romney is in the party, but he's not of the party. He's not a conservative. He doesn't believe in less government. He believes in more government because he can manipulate it to his benefit. He doesn't believe in less foreign interventions. He believes in more foreign interventions because there's profits to be had. He doesn't believe in civil liberties because, well, if there's liberty, then these and the Fed people and these Ron Paul people and these third party people and these Constitution people, they might complain about what I do. We can't have that. So what exactly is he for, you know? Is he for religious liberty? Well, that's not the way he was when he was governor of Massachusetts. Is he for traditional marriage? He wasn't when he was governor of Massachusetts. Is he pro-life? He wasn't when he was governor of Massachusetts. He doesn't believe in the Constitution. He doesn't believe in the American principles. And he's really a Democrat who just drifted to the party because that's where he had an opportunity. So we win nothing if Romney wins, other than we get rid of Obama. But is that really a victory when the policies that are going to proceed are exactly the same? Call the number 646-649-1013. Sammy, you got anything else you want to throw at us?
I care about you not feeling good. Give me 20 seconds of your...
Correction lights. Anyway. Exactly. What you're saying, Rex, is 100% true. But, you know, the thing is, we have to focus on what we are going to do after the election. I think there has to be, you know, a massive sort of awakening on behalf of the electorate in terms of what's going on in the country. And look, how is that going to happen? Well, you're going to have to go have conversations with people. Actually, you know, there are two or three people that I'm speaking with right now, and they are not, I mean, they're just sort of random acquaintances that you happen to come across in life, like your insurance agent, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, you just start having conversations, and it's never confrontational or anything, but slowly over time you start developing into the conversation, and one of these people, they're young and female and very much pro-Democrat Party and all that kind of stuff, and just having, you know, conversations with them, and now they're starting to sort of see the light and showing, they're sharing like YouTube video things with me, and I'm sharing them with them, and, you know, we're starting to have a conversation, and they're starting to see what's going on and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that really is how you slowly start changing the dialogue in the country. But they don't really like Obama, but they absolutely hate Romney, right? Okay, so that's like a lot of Republicans. They don't really like Romney, but they absolutely hate Obama. You know, it's the same thing. It's just a mirror image. Okay, well, why don't we all just get off the crazy train? Because none of us really likes our guy. We've just been told to hate the other side. And if we can have conversations, one American to another, and start talking about the problems that the country is facing and how we deal with them, and stop trying to turn everybody who says even the slightest deviant from what you agree with, stop trying to turn them into, you know, some sort of demon or a scarecrow figure, a straw man that your leadership has created for you. You know, this is political policy, okay? Political policy exists in a practical world, and there are policies that work and policies that don't work, and they demonstrably are so. This is not like religious dogmas and that sort of thing where, you know, we have to do this because we've been told to do this, and this is the right way to go, and it's something you can't question, right? This is not inherited wisdom that you have to stick with. This is in the realm of heuristics, trial and error, and looking at history and what traditionally works in these types of situations. And so if you can have those types of conversations, you really are going to do well for the nation. And, you know, I think you make some friends along the way. Now, everybody seems to think if you talk to somebody who disagrees with you, they're just going to yell at you. Well, those types of people are Alinskyites.
Yep.
That's what the people in the 60s did, because their whole thing was to stop Americans from actually having intelligent conversations in order to get everybody trapped into their little camp that they can never come out of. Well, I'm not playing that game anymore. I talk with a lot of Democrats, and we do disagree on things, but we never scream at each other. And on the occasions when we do scream, it's usually the Democrat who starts screaming, right? Because that's their tactic.
That's right.
Because
shout
if they're
down.
Wrong, they don't know what to do. They have to shout you down, exactly. And then they start calling you names, and at that point you know that you've won. And so, you know, you just weather the storm, and you just realize that you've won. And then, you know, you do the old thing where, like, well, I can see you're upset. I'll talk to you when you finally calm down. You know, and just let them.
Just try not to be so condescending when you say it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Tex, we've got Sam back on the line. Sam, are you there?
No, this is Janet
Sanford.
We've
got
Janet.
Hi, Janet.
Yes.
How are you?
Hey,
I'm
Janet.
Doing great. How are y'all this evening?
Excellent.
We're fired up.
I just want to say for the record that I support Virgil Goon, and so does our whole family. And we just want to put it out there in the air that everybody needs to think about it and vote for him. And that's all I have to say, is that we support Virgil Goon.
Well, thank you for that.
And y'all have a good evening.
You too.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Well, thanks
for letting us know. Yeah, that's exactly the important thing, okay, is exercise your conscience and talk to other people about exercising theirs. I mean, obviously the Sanford household has found the expression of their conservative values in the Constitution Party candidate, Virgil Goon. Now, maybe he's not your cup of tea. Do you have the option of Gary Johnson? You can write in Ron Paul. I mean, you know, the original gangster. If you're going to go Liberty, write in Ron Paul. Oh, they won't count my vote. Hey, I got to break it to you. They're not counting most of your votes anyway. So at least make your vote
exactly.
count
don't
as a principle.
Get,
you know.
Get off. Well, here, let me say this, Rex. Get off your ass
and go vote. Plain and simple.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, look, with the counting of the votes thing, you know, I've kind of been doing some thinking as to what I'm going to do. And, you know, there's the, okay, I'll write in Ron Paul, but he's not a valid write-in in Texas, so what are they going to do with my vote? Well, I guess I throw it in the other category or something like that. But then I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, why don't I just write in Newt Gingrich, right? I mean, that's the guy I wanted. So
right.
I still haven't decided exactly what I'm going to do. But
Well, now, here's the thing, is if you write in Newt Gingrich, what you're saying is that he embodies the principles that you would like to see in governance. Now, one could argue that, well, Newt's supporting Mitt, so that means you're supporting Mitt. No, I would argue that you're voting for Newt as Newt ran all the way through till the convention and for what Newt did as Speaker of the House. That's what you're voting for. That would be a good vote.
Well,
now,
absolutely.
It's not a
really
vote that...
give a crap the fact that the Republican Party has, you know, strangled him and said, hey, if you don't start saying positive things about Mitt, we're going to, you know, do this, that, or the other, but we'll help you revitalize your, you know, political career within the party if you toe the freaking line for us. I mean, they were yelling at him because he wasn't out there enough supporting Mitt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, look, you know, I mean, much like Ron Paul's supporters. Ron Paul's supporters, if Ron Paul, you know, endorsed Mitt Romney, they would completely throw him overboard, and he knows it. And the party knows it, too. Well, you know, Newt Gingrich supporters, we're kind of the same way. We don't freaking like Mitt Romney. And you know what? Newt Gingrich can point to that. He's like, look, my own supporters don't like this guy. I don't want to be out there saying positive things about Romney. Look, I will because I'm a Republican and all that kind of stuff, but this thing stinks. And you know he's saying it behind the scenes. You go watch what happened at the last day of that convention. A lot of frowns. A lot of frowns up there on stage. People were not happy. There was things going on in the background. You know, fireworks and stuff, right?
So now we got eyewitness accounts of how pissed he was.
Exactly.
Eyewitness.
Yeah. And Ann Romney was all freaking out, and, you know, Romney himself was super pissed about this, that, or the other. And, you know, just fuck him. You know, I just don't care. Yeah,
and I
mean,
this crap.
Party.
Text,
I don't care about Romney.
Text this crap of, like, you know, well, Gingrich isn't doing enough to help Romney. Look, you all forced Romney on us. Romney sucks so bad that even Gingrich can't save Romney from Romney. So, you know, quit hassling Gingrich. I mean, you treated him like shit through the primaries. You stole the convention from him and from Ron Paul. You gave it to Romney, and now you're pissed because Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich won't support Mitt Romney? Who the fuck do you think you are? You people did this. It is your fault. This is Sununu.
Exactly.
This is Boehner. This is Prince Pubic. You did this, and all of your capitulators who were for Paul or Gingrich or anybody else and are now on board simply because he's not Obama, they're helping you do this. Don't bitch at those of us who, A, won't vote, because there are 90 million of us who won't vote, and don't bitch at those of us who are going to vote our conscience, because we're doing the American thing, and you're doing the German Nazi thing.
Absolutely, Rex. And look, I mean, Romney was going to lose this damn thing. I mean, you saw it in September. He was just, that was a flat fucking convention is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody liked it. It wasn't, it was worse than just, you know, we got this guy. It was like people were pissed off. They left that thing. They were angry. And I'm not talking about just like us, right? But I'm talking about people who are in the party, who have been party activists for a long time. You know, people who are on the rules committee, who got sent on a magical mystery tour all around Tampa. That doesn't sit well with people. That sits in people's freaking craw, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That guy, he hasn't forgotten that. And you know what? The day of reckoning on what the hell they did still hasn't come, because everybody's like, all right, yeah, we got to do this for the election. We got to do this for the election. And then after that, you know what they did to Don Tone? You know, I think somebody's out there that brushing up a bit on their guillotine skills. You know, hey, how'd they build those things again? Well, you know, how do you get one? What kind of weight do you need? You know, because I think this current leadership of this Republican Party has completely jumped the shark, right? And I'll tell you something else. I think they realized it, and they were like, holy shit, if we lose, we're, like, totally fucked, basically. And so they said, we got to pull out all the stops to make sure that we win.
We are fucked.
Exactly. So. And that's what they did. They pulled out all the stops. And if you look after that first debate, even, you know, what Van Jones, the communist Van Jones, said, well, I think Mitt Romney won. Look, that guy doesn't say that unless there's massive amounts of A, pressure on him, or green in his pocket for saying it, right? The Reds love the green, right?
Yep.
So I think
right.
they just opened up the spigot.
100%.
Right? And they were just like, say Romney won. And that's what turned it around, because these guys were like, shit, we've really fucked up with this Romney thing. And you know what? Now it's likely that Romney's going to win. So they're going to say, well, it's all well that ends well, so I guess everything's okay. You know, no, it's not okay, okay? Because your victory doesn't matter to me. Even if Romney wins, that's immaterial.
Exactly.
Because we still got a score to settle. Because a party that's led by Mitt Romney is not the party that I will support. It's not the Republican Party. It's not the Conservative Party. It's not my party. And Mitt Romney at the head of it, that's the death of this party.
Yep, and let's hope that all those true conservatives who are capitulating for Romney now, let's hope that they keep their word this time, because many of them told me that they would never vote for Romney, but they are. And I understand the fear of Obama is driving into that. But let's hope that after the election, which is probably going to go for Romney, but even if it goes for the other guy, let's hope that they come back into the fold and help us focus on conservatism. Whether that be in the Republican Party, the Libertarian Party, the Constitution
yep.
Party, or some other solution, let's hope they come back into the fold. And don't, it's going to be tempting, but do not hold a grudge. Because the idea is that what's done is done, and we are where we are. And on November 8th, if it's Romney who's going to be president, then that's what we're stuck with. But we don't have to accept it. And we don't have to go at each other's throats over it. What
well,
we
the
need
only
to
grudge
do
you
is
should hold us against Mitt Romney and the sons of bitches that did that to us. But other than that,
exactly.
Don't
exactly. You bring everybody back into the fold, and we start working together. I'm opening up some mics because we've got some callers. We've got Trog on the line. I hope Trog's here with his club. Trog, are you there?
Yes, sir. We've been
hey.
Randy
hey,
and I
hey,
been clubbing. Hey, guys. Randy and I just had a club session going there. We're beating the hell out of everything.
All right. Well, here, hold on a second. Let me go and say goodnight to everybody. God bless you. And we love you. And we are not going to shut up. And thank you, Chris, for
you
calling
bet.
In tonight. And thank you, Rex, for getting in chat. And we will not shut up. I mean, times are really hard right now, but we are going to keep on going as long as we can. And Rex and Isabella, I cannot repay them for their friendship to me.
Awesome. And it's our pleasure.
They are awesome patriots. And Dan, I cannot repay him for his friendship to me. But let's keep on rocking.
Thank you,
and,
Sammy.
And let's take back our country on November 6th, a.k.a. no Mitt Romney, no Barack Obama. Go Virgil Goode. I am not shutting up, and I'm not backing down. You can come at me whatever you can. I don't care what my health is. I will be out here running a show until November 6th. God bless our great republic. Good night, everybody.
All right. Thank you very much, Sammy. That was Sam Sanford,
nice, Sam.
Constitutional Conservatives Unite. Check him out on Blog Talk Radio, and please follow the show. Also, follow Bard's Logic Political Talk and, of course, the Tex and Rex Show. We've got a caller from area code 602. 602, who are you and what is on your mind?
Oh, it's only me.
Oh, hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Did you
just
want to listen or you got something to add?
Well, let's see. I went to the store just now, and on my way, of course, Glenn Beck was on, talking about what's going on the East Coast where you guys are, and saying that, oh, they're going to maybe do FEMA voting places?
Well, you know, that I believe that if someone tells you to go vote in a FEMA location, I suspect, I'm not saying that this is absolutely true, but you might want to keep this in mind, that they might actually be trying to figure out if you're not willing to toe the party line, whether that's the Democrat or Republican Party is irrelevant, and then they might just keep you there if you don't vote right. So I don't know about that. I think that you better go find your local polling place. We got a week before we vote. There's one
right.
week till Election Day. I'm fairly confident we can get the power back up and the waters will recede.
Well, he was saying because of the power outages and everything else, and they don't think they will have the polling places up and running, so, okay, FEMA government's going to step in, is what Beck said.
All right. I don't know how it is in most places, but I suspect that if it's anything like the area around here, most of the polling places are at the local school.
Right.
I'm not,
churches.
I'm thinking that we're not going to keep the kids out of school for a week, and we're not going to keep people from going to church. I'm fairly confident that in the 21st century in America, we could... Someone's got some music going on in the background.
It's the guy across the street. He does this almost every night.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to let you go, Kim, but I appreciate that. I'll mute your mic.
I'll mute.
Mute. Great. All right. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks.
I guess they don't have a noise ordinance there in Kim's neighborhood.
Just put it this way, I would enact one.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's the 21st century, and as bad as this storm was, it is unlikely that we're not going to get power restored in most places, and in the few places where there is no power, just wait in line at the next nearest polling place and transfer everybody over there. This whole FEMA idea, I mean, come on, give me a break. It's not necessary. This is frightening. I've also opened up the microphone of vice chair of the Constitution Party, a soft-spoken Marine by the name of Randy. Randy, your mic is live.
Good evening, everyone.
Hey, Randy, how are you?
You know, I guess I shouldn't sound so ominous. I mean, it is almost Halloween, but, you know, with a name like Good, how can you really make that sound so ominous? Anyway... Yes. Excuse me just a second. Anyway, I was listening to you guys for a little bit, and, you know, me and Chris and Robert were having some pretty in-depth discussions over there at Bard's Logic, and, you know, I guess I was a little bit of a wet blanket over there, and I'll try not to be such a wet blanket here, but, you know, I honestly, I'll never be so glad as when this particular election will be over. I am so sick to my stomach, but sick in my heart about the stupidity, but, you know, the fear that people have, and, you know, the relationships that have been alienated. I know that, you know, Chris and myself and Robert were talking about that over there at Bard's Logic, and I know, you know, Tex and Rex, that you guys have, you know, lost relationships over this issue because of what was perpetrated there at the convention and, you know, the decisions that you guys have made. I'm sick to my heart that these kind of divisions are happening and that they're so, you know, strong and I want to say vile. But, you know, so I cannot wait till this is over and done with. And then we can start getting on with actually, you know, doing the hard work of building our party, you know, the Constitution Party, building conservatism as you guys are espousing here, you know, but we've got to do this relentlessly. We cannot take a break, you know, once the sixth is over, the seventh, we've got to start hammering this out because people are going to just start rolling over and going back to sleep just like they always do. And we somehow got to grab them by the shirt collars and say, stay up out of the bed. We need you.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Randy.
That's when the battle begins.
Oh my gosh! And so it's I almost feel like I'm just riding the storm out, and then, I just ride. That's all I feel. I just feel like I'm just right. It's a storm, and I feel like all I can do right now is just ride this out until all this stinking garbage is over with, and then we find out who the unfortunate left with that when the dust is settled, and what we're going to have to do to really start taking on this battle.
Well, I have a question for you, Mr. National Vice Chairman. In your position, are all of us, whatever, I can research too, me. I wonder what polls cost to get done, because one of the things that kills a third party is no information. Just like when you first called in, Robert and I were doing some, playing around with the numbers and the electors and everything else and speculating. The problem is you can't get any data. You don't know what Goode is doing in Virginia. You don't know what, Johnson, I was looking for some data on him because, he's been out there. Him and his VP have done 40 colleges in a row. And so they're pumping, they're all over the place, all over the map. And I was watching some videos today where he was being interviewed and discussing, some key states of where he would pull from Obama and where he would pull from Romney. And so we have all these different dynamics, but the problem is we're guessing, we
right.
don't have anything, not that you can trust polls so much, but they do give you a baseline and you can, figure a 5% lie factor, in anything you do. But I would think these third parties would want to get some damn polls out there so people could see the numbers.
Right.
Well, I think that the first question to ask there, Chris, is, why do we care about these polls? I mean, these polls have only it used to be that polls were done internally for the campaign so they would figure out where to deploy their resources
mm-hmm.
in order to
right.
pick up
now
more voters.
Now they're manipulation devices.
Now they're manipulations that the media puts out in order to manage our expectation. I mean, if you're going to
sure.
go vote merely because the guy's leading, then you're not voting. You're just joining the group. You're a sheep. You're just, jumping on board. Like, well, it looks like Romney's going to win, so I should vote for Romney. What the hell is that? You're supposed to vote for the principals, not the guy who's leading. So
think about this. How many people right now who are Republicans, right, or consider themselves Republicans, would, if they thought that Romney was going to lose, would not go to the polls because, well, Romney's going to lose, so why bother? But if they hear Romney's going to win, they're going to show up because they want to vote for the winner. And so Romney's going to win, so I need to vote. See what I'm saying? It's a completely self-negating thought process that goes into whether or not these people vote or not.
Well, yeah.
It's stupid. But the thing is, it's so stupid because the fact is, if you are a Republican and you're supporting Romney and you hear a poll that says he's losing, that should be your impetus to go vote. If he's losing
exactly.
and you want him to win, there's more reason for you to go, not less.
Sure. Well, yeah. And I'm not looking for polls to help me figure out who to vote for. I'm looking more from a strategy when you talk about resources, letting people know what are key states, where we can make a difference and who's playing in that state, who has the ability to, that whole block 270 thing. I think that's a little bit more where my mind's coming from on that.
Of course. And I agree with you. I was just pointing out the stupidity of the polls. And I would say, Chris, that I think that it is important to have that data. And that's precisely why, like it or not, political factions or parties are a part of the process.
Right.
Fathers warned against them. They're not going away. So this idea of, let's just get rid of parties and run candidates, it's not plausible. It's not realistic. The issue, though, as Randy has pointed out many times, is if you really want principles to triumph, then you need massive competition in the parties, and we need to get out of this duopoly. And then furthermore, if we're really going to go into this whole competitive thing, the kind of the invisible hand of the marketplace, then that pretty much tells you if we think that a central command economy, a bureaucratic socialist economy, is going to fail because it always does, and that a true free market with millions of independent actors making their highest and best use decisions that the market will naturally coordinate all of these economic actors, by the invisible hand, as Adam Smith called it, then the same thing applies to electoral politics.
And what happens is that you get active in your neighborhood, in your precinct, in your county, in your state, where you actually have the data because you're right there talking to the very people who are voting and looking and talking to those very candidates who are running. And then the invisible hand will coordinate it on a national level. So I think the polls are important, and that's why we have parties. But I don't think that should be the number one factor. Randy, to you.
Yeah, true. Obviously, you know, Jefferson and who was it? Madison, I believe it was.
Federal number 10, I believe.
Yeah, well, you know, they saw the value in it because when people started lining up on this party or that party, you understood what values that person had, basically.
Sure.
And, you know, as long as there's the truism, you know, birds of a feather flock together, you will never get rid of this two-party system, or not so much two-party, but a party system where, you know, factions of people who believe the same way are naturally going to become, you know, friends, you know, and associates to get that particular agenda or whatever, however you want to describe it, done. But to kind of go back to what Chris was asking, one of the things when I was running for chairman of the Constitution Party, I actually created what I called the battle plan. And from a Marine Corps perspective that does amphibious operations, one of the key elements in that particular operation is establishing a beachhead. And one of the things that we have never done within the party, and no party really has ever done this, is they have never actually created and established a beachhead from where they can launch other battles and other, you know, initiatives. And so one of the things we have got to do, and I am going to be, as vice chairman, I at least have a voice. I don't have necessarily authority, but I at least have a voice in the party. And my objective is to push us into the arena of strategically deciding who is going to be our beachhead and start making plans, start putting money, and start, you know, building up a candidacy that can, you know, just what I want to say is to overwhelm the people. You know, there's an old-fashioned word that is just an absolute beautiful word, and you're going to – I don't know what you're going to think of me when I say it, but what we have to do is make this whimsical. In other words, we need people to be drawn to it, be drawn to our candidate. We need somebody who has charisma, who can speak to the people and capture their attention, because like it or not, it's, you know, an election is going to be won by the person who captures the heart of their constituents, whether that's, you know, the Americans for the president or for their particular precinct or whatever level. They have got to connect with the people. And, you know, we've got to make sure that we have candidates ready to do that and able to do that. And that's where I'm really going to be pushing our party, is to really start focusing on establishing a beachhead, finding the candidate, start investing the money, start doing all the things necessary to win that particular battle. And then from there, you know, no longer will people be able to say, oh, you can't win. Well, guess what? We just won over here, and we're about to win over here now. So, you know, we've got to start building that initiative.
Wally, that's a swell idea.
Yeah, and so let me ask you this, Randy. So that entails, I would assume, where you focus, where your party's strong and you have structure, organization, and investment already there, so you have the numbers to pull this off. Are you actually looking at where you quit trying to thin out across the whole country and focus on key strategic battle zones?
Well, that's what we've got to do. But part of the problem, Chris, is the fact that it's almost like herding cats. You know, each person has their own little piece of the puzzle and their own little world that, you know, they want. You know, when I say, hey, look, we've got to have a beachhead, which one of these states is going to be it? Well, you know, obviously every single state should want their state to be that beachhead. And so what, you know, in a volunteer force where I don't have the authority of the chevron or the medal on my collar to say, no, this is the way it's going to be done, now I've got to work on getting a buy-in. And so I've got to get all the states to say, okay, where do we have the most legitimate area that we can win? And you guys come back and tell me. Because if I start telling you, you're going to say, no, I need my state or this. And so we've got to be able to somehow get these cats all herded in the same direction and get the buy-in on being able to say, okay, here's where we're going to establish our next beachhead during the interim elections. What is the best candidate that we have? What's the best state that we can go in and have the most realistic chance of actually winning? And we need to start saying, okay, now listen, you know, because here's what's going to happen when you in war, when you get your beachhead, you've got to have the majority of your force focused on that one company. That's whatever level of unit, but let's just say it's a company. Right. You've got to put all of your, not all, you've got to put a significant amount of resources, but you've also got to have company. Let's just say we're going to use Bravo Company as the beachhead. Well, you've also got to have Alpha Company on the left-hand side engaging the enemy. You've got to have Charlie Company over there engaging the enemy. But they've got to understand, you know, the battalion leader is going to focus his efforts on that beachhead company, Bravo Company. But if Alpha and Charlie don't do their job as well, guess what? The enemy can shift their focus on the beachhead and destroy our efforts there. So we've got to be able to strategically be able to plan this out, get the buy-in, and then start executing it. And that's not going to be easy.
You know what would work? You're a techno guy. You put a login area on your website where everybody goes to that one source where you have your map, your national map, and people can put input, and you have all those people working in the same, in that one environment.
Yeah, what Mike,
I just wanted to throw that in your brain.
No, that's actually, if you ever go to www.runrandyrun.com, my battle plan is still out there, and you can read that exact
right.
scenario. Now, what my plan is to get a website, what I call an internal website, not one that is focused
right.
on the trying to tell everybody here's our candidates, but
right.
a internal source website. The Marine Corps does exactly this. In fact, probably most services do, but I know specifically the Marine Corps has a website that is their internal website with internal information. You can go there, you know, as a Marine and find out the resources
mm-hmm.
that I need to know personally and can work with. Where there's
right.
also the
yeah.
recruiting website, you know, where you're that's the public face. So yeah, that's a part of the plan that I want to get developed.
Yeah, that's so key. When one source. People got to know where to go, you know, for the information where they can work together, where they know everybody else is going to be. You've got to consolidate. That's one of the most devastating factors of Facebook. It's such a cool environment because it's dynamic. It can grow. You can get new friends. People can pass information out. But one of the challenges I saw in the Newt campaign was I was dedicated to helping Newt. But the problem was I didn't know about all these other Newt groups where everybody with an ego went out and formed their own group, and they kept peeling off
right.
numbers from new Facebook
yeah.
site. And so it'd be me and about 6, 7, 8 other people fighting the whole world. You know,
right.
all, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know how many, you know, 20,000 posts to the end of the, you know, until he gave up. That's how many posts I had. You know, and I would go to and people started putting me on these other groups. And I'd be on these groups going, why is everybody over here? This is the campaign site over here. Newt
right.
built this for his campaign. Why is everybody over here where it's safe? We need you out here where you're
right.
you know, where you're presenting. And I could not, as an organizational guy who's built organizations, I'm like going, this is the most screwed up thing I've ever experienced in my life because, you know, you've got to have what Randy says, you got to have that beachhead, you got to have your command center, you got to have the place
yep.
where you work with the people who are behind the scenes, and then you got to have your public face.
We're in the last five minutes of the show. And Chris, the reason for that is it's the false sense of productivity. Okay, who has an inclination to do something, like I want to see Newt Gingrich, you know, win or whatever. So they want to get active, and they feel that, you know, posting something or writing something to other people who are allegedly also feeling the same way is somehow productivity, when in fact you're really just talking to each other and you're not getting the message out. So as an organization guy, you understand that it's the 80-20 rule or the 90-10 rule, people are not going to actually be productive unless they're given specific instructions, and so it requires leadership, which is precisely why we have parties, because the party gives a specific ordered structure for, hey, if this is our goal, this is how we're going to do it, this is what you can do, this is what you need to do, as opposed to having, you know, two dozen groups doing various different things and possibly duplicate efforts and working possibly against each other. So that's why we have it, but it all comes down to the individual in their local community stepping up and being active for the very principles that this country stands for, and of course we have differences on certain issues, but we have to agree on open and fair elections. We have to agree that there has to be easier ballot access, more accountable voting, paper and pen, public counting, and we all have to get involved and understand that it's the banner of the Constitution that unites us, even if we have different views on various specific policies. And that's where the debate needs to be restored, and you have to take the power back from the oligarchy. And so why don't we go ahead and do this, because we've got 3 minutes left. I'll give you 30 seconds each to close out, so go for it, guys.
I'm good. Go ahead, guys.
I just want to say thanks again, you know, for everything that you guys are doing and the open-mindedness that you are doing, your research and doing all of that. I sincerely appreciate that. And just to let everybody know that on November the 30th, the Constitution Party is holding their National Committee meeting in St. Louis, and would love to have you join us, because a lot of these ideas need to be heard outside from where I'm at. So really appreciate it, and thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Thank you,
thanks,
Chris.
Bye, Randy.
Tex and Rex will be back Thursday, 10 p.m., for another two-hour show about breaking the duopoly. And then we'll be broadcasting again 11 p.m. Sunday night following the Ralph Nader-sponsored four alternate party debate. And then again 11 p.m. the following day where Free and Equal has the Jill Stein-Gary Johnson debate. Tex, you've got 1 minute. Go.
Excellent. Well, I would just recommend everybody tune in for the Free and Equal debate. Also, there's a debate the day before that Ralph Nader will be at, not that I'm advocating Ralph Nader, but just that there'll be another opportunity to hear some of the other smaller parties speak. And the purpose of that is so that we can start listening to the other voices when the main voices have failed us. And we need a fail-safe, because I'm a Republican. I've always been a Republican. You know, this election has been a strange experience for me, but for the first time, you know, I'm wondering about my party, and I would like to get it fixed after the election and make sure this never happens again. But I don't know that I can trust my party, because it's pretty clear to me that the leadership of the Republican Party does not have the same vision for the party that I do, and they don't want people like me in the party anymore. They seem to think that we're troublemakers. And so, although I will try to reform the Republican Party, I also need to leave a door open for myself to find some other place to be in the future where they do want people with my thoughts and my ideas. And so I'm going to be working on both plans. And I would recommend that after the election, we all meet back up, whatever lever everyone pulled. I think we all are on the conservative team. And so we should all meet back up and start having that conversation again.
Agreed. And as Tex said, the issue here is that you have to stand up for the Constitution. You have to stand up for conservative principles. It's a privilege. It's a right. It's a duty and a responsibility. So in the last week, what you've got to figure out now is how to get as many people involved and try to get those people who normally don't turn out to vote, probably because they're pissed off with both parties, and let them know they have other options. And keep in mind, it's not about winning this office, but it's about making a loud noise for alternate parties so that we can break duopoly and restore liberty to our land once again. You have a duty to take the inheritance you've been given and pass it on to your posterity. Join us on Thursday. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Flames of Liberty will never die. We'll talk to you next time.